Salutations, everyone. This, of course, is the Bimar Technical Net. I am ATCTS. I'm a droid and control operator for the Bimar Technical Net. Every Sunday night at 8 o'clock, or in this case, 8 o'clock, we all get together and sit down in front of the radio to chat, and hopefully to teach each other some new things, to learn from each other some new things, and to be entertained and amused. So I hope we are accomplish all three of those things tonight. I hope you will return to this fine pre-Passover Easter episode of the Technical Net, and I look forward to a lot of interesting conversations tonight. Let me drop the repeater for a second, and I will return with the usual link. Okay. If you want to reach me and you can't do it via the radio, then email is a good option. That would be either for mailbag questions that normally are asked on the Technical Net, but because you might not be able to transmit to the repeater, you email them to me, I read them out, we talk about them, and you listen either via the internet stream or via the archived copy of the Technical Net. Or it could be a topic for discussion. Sometimes something comes up in the news that one of our participants is a semi-expert in, and they like to do a short presentation to explain it to the rest of us. That's great. Sometimes people want to be part of a discussion of a subject. Sometimes people don't know enough about it to feel comfortable, and they just want to hear other people's discussion. So if you have a topic of interest, you can email me and we'll see what we can do. Also, we're always looking for puzzles of a technical nature to kind of exercise our brains, preferably a puzzle that can't be solved by just Googling it and reading the results in 10 seconds. Also, if you have a space-related or NASA-related story or video and you'd like to hear Paul's take on it, you can either contact him directly at spacenetreport@gmail.com. Or you can email me. My email for the purposes of the Technical Net is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. As always, I maintain a link page of interesting articles that I've read over the past week, interesting YouTubes that I've watched over the past week, and sundry other things. Tonight, if you were curious, we had a conversation earlier in the month, last month, of free TV. We talked about it a bunch, and on my link page are two audio files. You can listen to what it sounds like coming out of your radio without decoding the digital stream. It sounds like noisy audio. And then the second audio file that you can play is the decoded one of what it sounds like when you run it through your personal computer software. And we have other things. I have an interesting YouTube where the guy takes apart the recent announcement that the fusion of hydrogen has been a breakthrough, and he kind of disassembles it and isn't terribly impressed. The guy's a PhD. He's a chemist or a physicist, I forget which. So, one second, let me drop. So as I mentioned, that's on my link page, and you can get to it any time of the day. It's open 24/7. Just type into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the link page. We have a chat room available. Sometimes the chat is busy. Sometimes it's very, very quiet. You get there by typing into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com. I mentioned that we have an audio stream of the Technical Net. I put it up primarily for the Technical Net, but some people ask me to keep it live the rest of the week. And so if you're interested to hear what Glenn Oaks is doing on the computer and don't have a radio nearby, just type into your browser, technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you an audio stream of the Glenn Oaks computer. As well, I'd like to remind people that my NJI has a great archive site called AmateurRadio.tv, and it's been going on for many years, it's over a million visitors, and it has archives of our Limar Technical Net going as far back as December of 2006. So a lot of criticism of from hams that have unfortunately either moved away from the area or passed away and become silent geese. So keep it in mind when you have some free time. Go back into the archives and take a listen. You'll learn all kinds of important, interesting things. Let me drop for a second and I'll be right back. Okay. We'll be asking for questions of a technical nature. I hope that the first few questions will be related to amateur radio. But we're open for discussing any science and technology. I'll try my best, and I might be able to offer some answers or insights, or I might be able to offer you some references to look elsewhere. As always, Google is our friend, but sometimes Google can fake us out. And then that will lead up to around 10:15, hopefully, and Paul, WS2N, will present the SpaceNet report. And I will return 11 o'clock p.m. to tie a bow on it and wish you all well. So that's the plan, if the universe allows and the laws of physics maintain themselves. Anyway, once again, I'm ACTGS. My name is Roy. This is the Limar Technical Net. If you have any questions, please feel free to hit that push-to-talk button. Give me your first name and your phone number.
UDU. Wayne, how are you, Roy?
I'm fine, Wayne. Should I mark you up for a question or a comment for tonight?
Yeah, Roy, if you don't mind, I'm on Echo Link. A really quick I'll just keep taking seconds, and I'll throw my question out there, and
you
give me the answer.
Okay, very good, Wayne. Yeah, I see you on Echo Link. You're in good company. Ken from Nebraska is next to you, and Nick, and a few other people, Ken. You're in good company, so I'll put you on the top of the list, and we'll get to you soon. Anyone else out there want to put their name on the list for tonight for any questions or comments or topics or discussions?
November 2, Victor Hotel, Louisville. I'm going to be looking for an activity, so please lock me in and back to that control.
Okay, Ken, consider yourself logged in and logged out. Anyone else out there with any topics for discussion, questions, or comments for tonight?
WS2N chat room is locked out, by the way.
Okay, I've fallen behind in opening it up. I'll open it up right now. It is now open. I had a discussion earlier this weekend about some guy said it's best to keep things simple. If anyone cares to take a look at my QRC page, they can kind of see what mission control sort of looks like. I took that picture way back when I was doing the Lion Talk session, and it's a busy street. So, all that can be telling me that, because I was chatting with the so we can go. Net. Okay, well, we'll hope for more participation as the night progresses. So, first on our list for tonight is Wayne, KD2UDU. What's your comment, comments or question for tonight, Wayne?
We all heard of Raspberry Pi, the little computers that were used for a variety of so I'm hearing now there's another device called the Strawberry Pi. Is that an upgraded version or a different version of Raspberry Pi, and what does it do?
Okay, that's a good question. Raspberry Pi is a company, I believe its headquarters is in the United Kingdom. And their guiding principle is to kind of cover the world with relatively inexpensive, very flexible micro security unit driven kind of microcomputers, if you will. This other brand is not the same. It's not an upgrade. The latest version of Raspberry Pi, as far as I'm aware, is Model 4B. That's the board itself. They sell one embedded in a keyboard. I think that's called the Raspberry 400. And there's also a low-cost, very limited version called the Metro. With Raspberry Pi, a lot of them aren't. They're not consistently compatible, they've been a little bit more popular recently because, like many other places, there have been chip shortages and the price of Raspberry Pis have gone through the roof. What you used to be able to buy for about $50-$60, I've now seen selling for $150, and sometimes you can't even get them at that price. So if you can stick with Raspberry Pi, unless you feel very comfortable and are flexible with incompatible aspects of ARM, there's another brand called an ARM or something as a takeoff on a Raspberry. I would tend to kind of wait for the chip shortage to improve and buy an actual Raspberry Pi model. It'll give you less headache as far as compatibility issues, depending upon what you want to do with it. Okay, very good, Wayne. And just as long as you mentioned it, because I've been interested in Raspberry Pis for a while. Most amateur radio operators experience Raspberry Pis in the form of hotspots for DMR and DSTAR and Fusion, getting into internet-based digital servers. Those units tend to be called, they run a software called PiStar. Different companies and individuals put them together and install PiStar software and give a lot of hams access to the digital stream without having to go around repeaters in their neighborhood. So that's PiStar. I've been using a Raspberry Pi for as a firewall for my internet access. It's called PiHole. You can put the white list and black list on it, so you can block ads, you can block sites that you don't want to experience. And it does other things. It caches main servers so that you don't have to go to your ISP and ask it where to find things, where it can record what you're asking for and such. Well, it's a five-hole. It's a nice little a program to install in a Raspberry Pi, and I have one of them that does that. I have a 400 that I kind of use as a Raspberry Pi computer. I have a little touch screen that I connect it to, and a mouse, and that's built in keyboard, the 400 model does. And it's kind of interesting. When it was first sold, it was reasonably priced at, I think, $100 for the whole kit, the little wires and mice, all kinds of things, power supply. It's gone probably double that price these days. I'm not quite sure if it's quite as much of a value as it was then. But for people out there interested in playing around with low-cost microcomputer boards, Raspberry Pi is an excellent to play around with. If you are interested in microcontrollers that adjust motors and sensors and stuff, and something like Arduino or PIC would be probably the preferable chipset. But those are microcontrollers, and they have their strengths in different things. Anyway, anyone with any questions related to Raspberry Pis, as long as we're on the subject. Yes, so you're a little bit noisy and you're dropping out of the repeater. Like I said, I can copy most of you. You're about 50% noise, and at the beginning of your transmission, you seem to have dropped out of the room.
Let me hear my attendance out there through my radio boy, 991. Let me get on that echo link, and I'll get back to you.
We have a lively group of people on Echo Link tonight. One, two, three, four people. So you'll join those four people. Once again, if anyone has any questions or comments or anything before we move to Alan and the questions, then please pick up the floor button. I guess we'll move on to Alan, and the gentleman is going to be on, that we just talked to, will go on Echolink, and we'll talk with him after Alan. So, Alan, what's your question or your comments or your topic for tonight?
Hopefully you can hear me okay. I'm on a handheld. So, does the power you're using on HF affect the zone at all? In order to change the research kinetic instrument, I always what I have to affect it in the power is changing the power. That's the power to the sun.
Okay. Let's for the other people listening, let's talk about what a skip area itself is. There are two means of transmission for radio waves. There are ground waves propagation, and there are the waves that propagate the ground, up to a building, and what have you. And eventually, the longer and farther you go, the inverse square law and the free energy laws and the reflection, scatter, and absorption of buildings. Another is highway propagation, which your signal system hopefully is pointed towards the horizon. It skips up onto the ionosphere, one of the layers of the ionosphere. There's the D layer, the E layer, the F1, and the F2 layer. And in that layer, it's refracted back down, and bounce off of that and go back into the ionosphere and refract it a second time. So you'll have to go down. Now, this is where the ground fails you and the sideways propagation comes on because it's going up into the sky where no one can perceive it, and then it has to retract back down only when it gets near the Earth and has to perceive it. So there's a distance from your transmitter to the receiver involved in sky waves that isn't involved in the ground wave. So the distance between the place where ground wave propagation ends and sky wave propagation begins is the skip zone. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. So if you increase the power, you might increase your more local signal. The ground wave propagation might be receivable a little bit farther, because although a certain percentage gets absorbed, it can start with a larger amount. It can get a little farther. It's not going to be a dramatic difference, but it can improve your propagation rate. It is not going to affect your sine wave. Your sine wave is not affected by the intensity of the signal, but the geometry of the signal. The takeoff angle of your antenna and how it skips onto the horizon and the ionosphere will determine, and of course, the characteristics of the ionosphere at that moment in time, because it's ever changing, will affect the sideways propagation ranges. So I hope that answers your question, Alex. If not, feel free to ask some more questions. Necessarily, but they all have pluses and minuses, as we've mentioned before. Vertical antennas are not altitude sensitive. You can place a vertical on the ground with proper radial configuration to shield it from ground coupling energy losses, and you'll get a very good signal. As opposed to a horizontally oriented dipole center fed or off center or end fed, if you have it horizontally oriented and it is less than about a half of a wavelength from the ground, it will tend to reflect off the ground and be absorbed by the ground and become a more local type of antenna. We call that near vertical incident skyways because a significant amount of the radiated RF, rather than skipping across the horizon into the ionosphere, as I mentioned earlier, it kind of goes straight up and some of it bounces off layers above you, and so it's a very good thing. It's used by the military if you're kind of in a valley and there are hills surrounding you and you want to communicate with people nearby over those hills. If you want to communicate distance, it's not very good. So it depends on the altitude. With horizontally oriented antennas, that isn't the case with vertical. Vertical, though, means radial wires or counterpoises and balanced horizontal zones. And verticals tend to pick up a little bit more noise. They tend to be omnidirectional, so they don't have a directional gain. So, you know, every antenna has their pluses and their minuses.
I heard you say with a loop antenna that height doesn't matter. But like a loop antenna on the 57th floor is better than a loop antenna on the ground, right?
Well, surprisingly, not particularly. I mean, the additional benefit is you're less likely to have a identified by large buildings, so you'll have a clear point-to-point contact. So altitude generally is good for antennas for that reason, but functionally, one of the benefits of a magnetic loop is that it doesn't really get much better once you put it at least about, and there's the argument, about 6 to 10 feet above ground. You don't want it directly on the ground because if it's on the ground, it's more likely to couple with the ground, and it's an inefficient antenna by design, and too much energy will decouple and will warm up the ground underneath it. But if you elevate it 6 to 10 feet, you shouldn't have that much ground coupling. So except for getting past a large building that might be blocking you, elevation is not quite that important for magnetic loops. As I mentioned before, all the different antennas have different characteristics. The different bands have different characteristics. What you would want to do for 80 meters is different than what you want to do for 10 meters. So, you know, make sure that you have a good idea of what band you're more interested in than others, because every antenna in the metropolitan area is a compromise. So you got to pick your band and then decide on the compromises that would fit in best with the band that you're interested in. Okay, Alex, thank you for participating. I see that gentleman who said he was going to go into EchoLink. For some reason, it seems to be popping in and out. H2WNN, if you're out there and you can respond through the EchoLink, please do.
Good evening. Network. This is Kilo Delta Whiskey, November Mike. I was trying to get on before and it didn't go through. How about now? Can you copy me?
Yes, I can copy you. What's your first name, sir?
This was Kilo Delta 2 Whiskey, November Mike, Concepcion from Patterson, New Jersey. I was following up on that question with the EchoLink conversation with Raspberry Pi. If I was to bring in mobile or Raspberry Pi, what's the best internet server to run a Raspberry Pi for mobile operations when you're away from a regular home service and you want to go with Raspberry Pi mobile and you want to install, get a good server to hold up the ham radio communication transmission. Over.
Good question. The most important thing would be, do you have a smartphone?
I have a Raspberry Pi 1234B MFJ. I just got haven't had time to work on it because I've been trying to set up my equipment and back to you next.
Yeah, I understand. What I'm asking you is, do you own a cell phone? If you have a modern day, you know, cell phones, we've talked about it in the past. There's kind of the smart version and the not so smart version. And if you have a modern day smart cellular phone, it usually comes with a internet access upload download plan, and it usually has the ability to act as a local hotspot for other devices. So did do a raspberry device and use that as your source of independent service provider. Now, obviously, if you don't have a smartphone like that, then you have to look for cell phone hotspots that are not built into a cell phone, and you have to find a plan for you that's cost effective.
Understood about the hotspot. I am talking out of the iPhone right now, and I used the hotspot before. I also purchased a mini iPad, and I used that, and I hotspot the iPad to the phone because I was able to use SDR. There's more applications on the iPad than an iPhone or any other small Samsung device. I know both operating systems. But it doesn't hold up well. It depends all on the carrier. Because if I was local in front of my home, AT&T won't even give me one bar, so it's not going to sustain me. It's making me use the one at home. But even if I'm local in town, still AT&T is bad service. So I upgraded to T-Mobile. It's better service. It hurts better around here. But then elsewhere, it all depends. I was just thinking, besides telephone companies and independent servers that have just not to give a phone, has so many applications running in the background that it's not going to, when you're trying to run an iPad, unless you buy an iPad with a mobile service already, and then you don't have to go to the phone. So, but I still think there's got to be a better way or a better hotspot than going to a telephone company like hotspots and stuff like that. I'd rather try the best way, but I'm not too satisfied with that. And I'm for other ways. Back to you, Matt.
Okay, I offer that as the easiest way. The big problem is, as far as I'm aware, there's very few other options. Most wireless internet service providers are basically the same people that provide cell phones. You can take different carriers. As you mentioned, every carrier, there's no perfect carrier. There are carriers that have good saturation in places that one person might use and not in others. So it's sort of, you know, there's no such thing as this is the best carrier and this is the worst carrier. It kind of depends on your geographic location. Now, as far as I'm aware, the only other option that I know of a non-wired or fiber-related internet service provider that would be wireless would be these new satellite dish type of situation, which is probably a big technological hassle to deal with because, you know, if you were a news station, it wouldn't be a problem if you had a budget of a ridiculous amount of money. So you'd need to have the satellite dish mounted, the electronics mounted, and you'd also probably need the satellite dish to adjust position depending upon where you're driving to and from. So unfortunately, the only cost-effective thing that I am aware of is, you know, either your carrier or another carrier. I don't think it's going to make that much difference if the cell phone is doing a little something on the side. You know, you could always kind of kill applications for things that are not doing too much at once. But one of different cell phones. If anyone else has any better ideas of how get wireless internet without going to cell phone companies or satellite dish companies, please tell me.
Okay, thank you, Matt. This is Kilo Delta 2, Whiskey November Mike. Understood. Just to finish it off, I know I had like AT&T like 4 years ago. And their service was really lousy here. What I did, I switched to T-Mobile, as I mentioned earlier. But then, when I got into the last 25 started going back to AT&T and I bought it for over the weekend. So I got me like a SIM card. And when I bought it home, it's still, after all these years, the service is still bad. So they kept on telling me that their system was not upgraded. So that's the final word on that one. But I think you're right. There is no other way out. I'm stuck with either server. So I'll just take the one that gives me the best bar and over and out. Kilo Delta 2, Whiskey November Mike, listen.
Okay, very good conception. I wish I had better news for you and more information. There are actually competitors out there that are going to compete with Starlink for satellite-based internet, but I think for the most part, their equipment is built and designed for stable stations, houses or trailer parks and such. Not really mobile. So we can have better news. Wish you well with your experience in the future. There are other people who do the same things that you do, trying to use these devices, Raspberry Pi-based devices, in part, and wish you luck. Anyone with any other comments? Okay, I guess not. So thank you, Concepcion. I hope you will continue to join us here on the technical mess. If you have any questions down the road, you know where to take them.
Thank you, Rick. And about my first contact with you, it was really lousy. I'll try to improve that. I'm going through an antenna tuner because I know my antenna has almost 2 point something on loss. And I don't have no way to get up there anytime soon. So I've been using an antenna tuner, and I'm using the 991, and you was not copying. But when I tuned the antenna on that 991A, I had really low SWR, and I thought that was going to make to the network, but it didn't. So over and out, and Concepcion, Kilo Delta 2, Whiskey, November, Mike, listen.
Okay, very good, Concepcion. New Jersey, unfortunately, is a bit of a distance from the antenna, we've discussed in the past. Antenna tuners are interesting things. If you go down to 75 meters, you probably will listen to people yelling and screaming at each other, because there's a camp that thinks that antenna tuners are almost magical. Lossless devices, that's just too magic. And there's another group that thinks that it's a trick. It's a trick. It's kind of like the tooth fairy. It's like telling yourself Santa Claus is real. I hope someone's not breaking any kind of phenomenon for anyone to know what Santa Claus is real. All things being equal, it's best to transmit into a resonant antenna. If you're not resident and you need to go through that antenna, then you need to adjust its apparent impedance close to 50 so that your transmitter will not cough up a furball. But there are reflected attenuation losses that make it a less efficient means of transmitting. So I guess the problem is both the distance between the repeater antenna and your jack, and that antenna tuners, although they're useful, they're not magic and they're not perfect. So I hope that when you're able to fix up the mismatch and go without the antenna tuner, that you'll be able to hear us better and speak to us better. But I'm glad that the powers that be have enabled EchoLink as an option.
That is true, and like I said, I'm going to have to get that antenna changed out. And the antenna tuner, like you said, what it's doing, is making your signal increase your receive signal, but it's not doing anything for the CX. It's just increasing the EC like a preamp, EC preamp. That's all it's doing, but that's where I'm getting my skill out of that antenna tuning. So I will work on the antenna. In the meantime, I just get in contact through the next, through Echolink, until I solve my problem with antenna tuner and get rid of it. Kilo Delta 2, Whiskey November Mike, back to net.
ACTGS. Well, the theory behind antenna tuners and why it helps receiving the signal. I think about 6 or 8 months ago, Andy of UA2CDL, who I hope is out there listening, gave a talk about impedance matching, that you get the most transfer of energy when you're going from a source and a load that's the same impedance. So the close end, your receiver is designed to receive signal with a 50 ohm source. So by taking your non-resident 2-to-1 antenna that's ordinarily something like 100 ohms of impedance and putting it through an impedance transforming circuit to 50 ohms, you are improving the energy transfer, and that increases the amount of watts or microwatts of electricity that's going into your receiver and allowing you to hear a stronger signal. So that's why the antenna tuner makes the receiver sound better.
So I would say that in the future, if I was to tune that antenna to 1.1, and then if I had like a problem with receiving, the antenna tuner will come in handy to preamp the receive signal. So that's a good experiment right there.
I mean, that's the point of the topic. Very often you do these little experiments, you learn something, you tell your friends and they learn something. For a 1.1 to 1 mismatch, it would sort of depend upon the insertion losses and transmission line losses of the antenna tuner, whether you would discern any difference. It's very, very possible that tuning it through an antenna tuner from 1.1 to 1 would be so small a difference that you would either not hear any improvement in the strength or possibly even have a slight decrease in strength. So it's one of those things that relies on the nature of your transmission line and the efficiency and insertion loss of the antennas in the circuit.
10-4, understood. While you were talking, I was also thinking that maybe it could be a better option if I start hooking up the 991A through the Raspberry Pi, through Windows, and that's what I'm trying to get at, working through the internet, rather than I could probably fix that problem right now if I could get that radio and hook it up through the internet, which I already did the software and I'm connected to Windows. Maybe I just need to hook up to the repeater through the internet and the radio, the 991, so I got to figure that one out.
Okay, I guess so. It depends upon the model. I don't know if 991 is able to go directly into our repeaters are linked to the internet through a series of different connections. There is IRLP protocol, which is usually a repeater-to-repeater protocol. That's an internet, voice-over internet protocol that our repeaters are plugged into. In addition, we have OSTAR, which is another voice-over internet protocol, very much like Echolink. And as we noted before, we have Echolink. So we have three different devices that go through voice-over internet protocol. Depending upon people's equipment, sometimes you can get your radio to connect to one of those protocols, and other times you have to go through some intermediary stage.
So I wish you good luck. Like I said, thankfully we do have Echo Link. As long as we all don't quick key each other and block people from using Echo Link, it's been a very useful addition to our toolkit.
Thank you, Matt. And I'm new at the net, repeating network. And if you want to just, the net is out, you'd like give me a little bit of orientation about the routine. And I'll stand back and listen. This is Kilo Delta 2, Whiskey November Mike, receptionist, better known as JR. Send it back.
Okay, JR. It's quite simple. This is the Weimar Tactical Net. It's been going on for 43 odd years. And every Sunday night at 8 p.m., we will get together on this repeater and against other repeater in the area, thanks to Weimark. We take questions, comments, topics for discussion, and 1015, old WS2N, who is very knowledgeable about NASA-related, space-related topics. Will give us a rundown of stories that have become relevant in the past week. And we do this week in, week out, and not me personally, but this technical mess has been going on for 43 years now.
I'm just you probably picked up my co-sign. If you like sending me an email, my email's there, send me, and I'd like to know also the times and what time the net comes together.
Okay, JR, I'll send you a little email after the technical net is over and done with. Thank you for participating tonight, and like I said, we're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m. This usually goes from about 8 to about 11, give or take, so you're always welcome.
Roy, WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
He can get on tomorrow night as well, at 8:30 on these same frequencies and see if he can check in. You don't have to be a club member. That's the club information that they give you a bunch of information on that as well. What's going on with the club, and they talk about the repeaters. That'd be right.
Okay, thanks for pointing that out, Paul. Yes, JR, there are a number of nets available on Weimark. Every Monday night is the club info net. On the 3rd and 4th Wednesdays at 8:30 is a computer net. And on the 5th Wednesday of each month is a trivia net at 8:30 as well. So the club maintains a series of nets that you can listen to the same way that you listen to the technical net.
Thank you, Roy. And thank you, Paul. I'm correct. It was a very good learning experience. I'll catch up with you guys later. I'll be standing by listening to the rest of the comments and whatever you guys are going to talk on. Thank you again, and God bless you all. I'll be standing by. 73, standing by.
Well, thank you very much, JR, and I hope you'll join us again in future episodes of this technical event. Once again, as always, I am AC2GS, and my name is Roy, and this is the Weimar Technical Event. So if you're out there and you have a question or a comment or a topic for a discussion, feel free. If that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign.
David, K2RY.
Hello, David. What's your topic, comment, or question for tonight?
Well, I was working on this experiment to see if a data-based phone, like an internet Whether it is more stressful than a phone that only has talk and text. You know, basically, simple things that users like go to a window and buy a ticket, or to pay for a taxi cab, cash. And I guess my question is, you know, what is the future of the internet? Go ahead.
Sally G, if I had 100% surety of the future of the internet, I would probably do a lot of day trading investments and retire a billionaire. No one really knows for sure. There are a lot of people with a lot of buzzwords. I would always suggest to people to beware of people with buzzwords. About 6 months ago, there was a series of weird discussions. I think it was in the Senate. It could have been the Congress, but probably it was the Senate, where a bunch of lunatics were trying to explain cryptocurrency and were discussing terms like Web 3.0. If someone ever mentions Web 3.0 for you, near you, make sure that you still have your wallet in your pocket and run in the opposite direction. No one really knows. Zuckerberg invested billions of dollars in virtual reality and lost it all. He is now kind of rearranging his direction, and he's going to be promoting artificial intelligence, which might be a smarter choice on his part. I think artificial intelligence will become incredibly important in the future, in ways that we cannot even imagine at this point, because that's the nature of technology evolves beyond our imagination. They're already selling applications where you can type in a description for a cartoon or a painting or a picture of some kind, and it will render it using somewhat less sophisticated artificial intelligence than is readily available for free. So there's a lot of people trying to make a buck off of this, but I think they'll be making more and more bucks off of this in the future, and we'll hear a lot less about Web 3.0. But ultimately, it's anyone's guess. I have experienced all forms of cell phones, at least because I had cell phones when they weren't terribly smart, and I prefer them smart. Sometimes you can get a little bit too involved in a cell phone, and I've seen people, or groups of people, who text each other when they're in the same room, which always strikes me as a little weird, but whatever works for you. So I think that the future is going to be enormous. There are breakthroughs in artificial intelligence every 10 minutes at this point, strangely. So, you know, where it comes, I don't know. There are also people, let me break for a second. Okay, didn't want to time out the repeater. There are people who are, as always, whenever there's a very strong force in one direction, it generates a force in the opposite direction. So guys like Musk, who invested in OpenAI and then sold his shares and couldn't see the big boy, is kind of talking down artificial intelligence. So I think it's the next big thing. I think it is going to disrupt a lot of businesses in ways that we presently can't imagine. But how you make a nice profit off of it, I don't know.
Right now, I'm talking about the results of these technologies. Does it make people feel comfortable? Does it offer them some kind of security? How does it affect their way of life? Can they make a profit from it? And what's the overall value of this? We basically have to call our hands. Technology of data. people can look inside and see what's in there. The data can be used and it can be manipulated and it can be whatever. Say, you know, how does this affect people who use the technology?
Well, I mean, we've talked about this before. Technology is a tool. Usually the way I phrase it is like a hammer. You can build a house with a hammer, or you can cave in your neighbor's head with a hammer. It can create, it can destroy. I think the same can be said for any other form of technology. There are aspects of developing technology that will comfort people sometimes, effectively, sometimes ineffectively, and unfortunately sometimes perversely. There were already artificial intelligence applications that simulated having a friend, and for an additional fee, they would bring on algorithms that would simulate that this artificial intelligence was your girlfriend, which strikes me as going a little too far. And for some reason, I think because they got into trouble with that, they pulled that extra feature out, and there were a lot of unfortunately very depressed people after that. They experienced the same loss as if their girlfriend left them, which is terribly sad and very weird to me. So.
QSL. Well, you know, I think that people, the developers, people who build the machines, you know, as you described, they could easily create something that isn't so wholesome, isn't so acceptable. And, you know, I think any group, any organization, any band of people, you know, people that are grouping together, you know, there are imperfections there, there are things that might not be so acceptable. So, you know, how does this affect the quality of life? I guess you say that it can certainly be the opposite of that.
It's a well-known phenomenon that when new technology develops, one of the first industries that usually tries to take as much advantage of it as possible is the photography business. And it's demonstrated even with artificial intelligence. We have discussed in the past how I kind of teased out a 10-minute puzzle from ChatGPT. I asked a bunch of graphic generating artificial intelligence to draw me antennas, demonstrating that they didn't have the same idea. Artificial intelligence is designed to replicate voices and images and to animate the images. And so it is not surprising to me that there are pornography sites that will take people in the public area, take their images, take their voices, and use it to map to an artificial intelligence and provide customers with simulated pornographic scenes of famous characters, either alive or dead. There was more than a few things blowing up on Twitch where a guy streaming allowed someone to look at his desktop window where he had artificial intelligence simulated pornography visible, causing a great deal of pain.